Ja, wir sind Nazis, also seien wir auch stolz drauf oder seien wir uns wenigstens dessen bewusst. That was the tweet that I just sent out. And I welcome you, Adam and Curry, John and Adam, I mean, here at this special recording just for you. And yeah, I was thinking about explaining myself to length and to depth about the German history, about my people and my identity. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So, I think you two could understand me. Nobody else. No, I don't even know why. So, yeah, I mean, it's normal to be proud of your nation, your people, especially in America, of course. But here, it's a little different, yet I feel this pain inside me about my people being Nazis. And this pain is even endured. I have to endure it all the time whilst being set out in this political media landscape where the talking about the crimes, the Nazis and the barbarism is always present and is always kind of the underlying tone here in German politics. And this special sentence from our foreign minister Joshua Fischer around 2000 was that, yeah, nie wieder Auschwitz. Es gilt nie wieder Krieg, aber auch nie wieder Auschwitz. Never again Auschwitz. Auschwitz, he said, that doesn't, we must stop that from happening again. And therefore, we have to invade other countries like Yugoslavia back then, with NATO, with our NATO partners over there. Salutes and my best greetings to you over there, sirs and ladies and generals in the US Armed Forces. So, but I'm talking here from a Nazi standpoint. So I salute over the ocean, but it's a big, big distance. I don't know if you can really imagine the mental distance that's lying between here and there. I don't think so. Even Adam, who knows both worlds, but even he, I think, doesn't understand that really abyss between America and Europe. So I come in as a cultural translator. I want to build bridges, yeah. Not bridges like in the NATO, Atlantic Councils, and so on, but bridges between the podcasts. The left radical podcast leader here in Germany is Tischlein Deck Dich, my very own beloved podcast. And the right wing podcast, or I don't know if you'd call yourself that, but I don't mind, yeah. I don't mind right wingers, you know, they're not as bad as the lefties, the weak lefties that don't dare to be communist, full grown and hard communist, hard baked communist. Yeah, I'm baked, by the way, yeah, of course, but just smoke one joint. So, to be all clear and set, and I want to continue with my discourse. The discourse in Germany is that Hitler was very bad, and therefore we have a moral obligation to be loyal to our partners at the NATO stage. Being loyal means being driven into waging wars on other countries, being driven on supporting with material these wars, these military operations, drone operations, and whatever. This is right here where I stand, I'm about maybe 30 kilometers away from this US military base here near Stuttgart, or in Stuttgart. There are two bases. One is for Africa, the other for Europe and Asia, I think. Yeah, and they're coordinating all the wars and all the terror that America uses there, that America administers, pays for, and organizes. And yeah, maybe they don't fight all their wars by themselves, but it doesn't matter. It's really a terror regime here and over there, worse. But yeah. But we have the obligation to do exactly this kind of militaristic aggressive stuff, and we have to do this, because if not, it leads to Hitler, as we see, like in Putin. We Germans, we learned from history, and therefore we are strong on Putin. That's our belief today. The mainstream narrative belief, of course, but also me as a little podcaster emitting his critique. Also, I'm part of this swamp, really. It's a swamp, mainstream narrative, mainstream dictatorship of meanings and terms of views on history and on our minds. But never mind. So let's move on. Let's move on. Thanks. Come on. So I was talking about this girl, of course, in the earlier podcast in English. This girl that's an Ukrainian co-worker. We have two of them now. This one girl that I, well, felt a little bit enchanted by her, if I might say, express myself this way. Espresso, yeah. We never drank espresso together, and I just like to change that and be her friend on just this platonical level, to be clear. And I'm beyond that, this swinish stuff that I expressed in the past episodes. No, I'm beyond that. Today I'm grown, because although it was only yesterday, a lot changed in these days for me, and a lot became so clear about history. Of course, Ukrainian and German history is also interlaced and with the war, then being part of the Soviet Union. And I thought just a good story or a good novel to write would be a German soldier participating in World War II, invading Ukraine, falls in love with a girl from there, from some peasant county. And yeah, the Germans, the Nazis, they're so strong, they're just fusillating all the inhabitants. But what happens? He just could protect her. And I don't know, it would be a good story, because it would be so innocent. This German is also just part of his regime. He can't do anything. I mean, if he doesn't fight, what will they do to him? So it's a moral question. But then the Ukrainian girl, she's, I don't know, she's not interested in politics, right? Although they accept communism, they don't think much about these political fights on the peasant lands, and yeah, she just wants to survive. But then the question is, she falling in love genuinely for him, or is he just thinking this, and she's playing this love all the time? That's the big question. Love, maybe you never know, and therefore this would be the big story, the big Zwickmühle, as I called it earlier in German. It's a nice word, Zwickmühle. It's an itch when you're between two things, between two roads, you have to decide, or yeah, just a uncomfortable situation that demands action, and action is difficult. So that's my novel. That's just came to my mind earlier when I was smoking, after I smoked outside. But now let's move on, people. Today, yeah, I'm a grown up. I'm just speaking my mind, just speaking bluntly, and I don't smoke blunts. No, that's so. People, this is, by the way, Castlecast 5 for my mental registry. I have just different strains of podcasts in my library for just keep for myself, just record for myself. It's Castlecast because of Castellano. That means Spanish, because I also speak Spanish. I not only visited Argentina, but I lived there for 3 years because my father is a Mercedes-Benz executive. Yeah, executive, right? Although I must clarify, he's on the lowest level of the executive order. So there's four stages there. The highest, the fifth would be the board, of course, the executive board with the CEO, Ola Källenius. He's a Swedish guy, the first foreigner to be in this position. And my father, he's on stage 4, and there are these 4 stages, and stage 0 is the board. So there's many stages. Just wanted to express that he was born into a proletarian household. His father was a refugee from Czechoslovakia. At the end of the war, had to flee from there. His mother was from very poor family from their little town around Stuttgart. And yeah, they met there. My father was born in the 60s, and he's about to enter his retirement in 2 years. This was this proletarian. They just make profits, be on the winning side of this post-war world order, and unlike in the DDR, in the East, where you could make less money, they made money, although in working class jobs, lower working class, let's say, but they were very sparsam. They save a lot, like we do here in the South, in Schwaben, Swabia. And so, yeah, that's this mindset that my father grew into, and he became, started his career at Mercedes-Benz, then sometime in the 90s, a few years after, became executive on the stage. And in 1997, we went to Brazil. My whole family, because my father had signed a 3-year contract, and we lived there near Rio de Janeiro, in a city that just has 1 million inhabitants, Juiz de Fora. It's about 3 hours from Rio. That's Juiz de Fora. There was the factory of Mercedes-Benz. They produced the Class A there, and yeah, we lived there for 3 years. They're always sending out these executive or also simple workers, not the physical workers, the office workers. They just interchange them, send them there to teach them the German knowledge, which of course isn't bad per se. It's bad in this capitalist framework, but that's a good thing. Also, that they can exchange and maybe later have all the knowledge there in Argentina to produce by themselves. But of course, that doesn't happen in capitalism. So yeah, but in Argentina or in Brazil, where we were first, then we returned to Germany in 1999 or 2000, I'm not really sure, but doesn't matter. 3 years, I went to kindergarten, to school here, and then when I was in 10th grade, that's about 3 years from graduating, about 15 years old, we went to Argentina. My brother's 1 year and a half younger than me. And then we both went to the Goetheschule there, which is the German patriotic school. It's a net of schools around the world in every major country. This exists. Maybe there's probably a similar thing for Americans. The Lincoln School was a big thing there, I remember. Yeah, Lincoln. They talked about it. My classmates had friends there at Lincoln. So yeah, I just want to come back to Brazil, because although this stay in Argentina is important for my biography, of course, I remember a lot of that adolescent years. I lived there when I was 15 until I was 18, then we came back in 2013, and that's just the critical phase of a human life, I think, at least in my experience, in my view. That's just, and you heard me talking about love and this swinish stuff, as I called it, and when you think about love and the hormones being wild and all this stuff that makes you feel so great but also so painful, and it's all this dialectic between pain and joy, and this is just the strongest phase back then, I think. It's just when you can really feel it in that phase of growing up. Yeah, but of course that's an important phase in my life, therefore. But maybe more important is yet this stay in Brazil, because I went to kindergarten there the first 3 years. A normal Brazilian kindergarten, because this was not such a major city like Buenos Aires or like Rio, where there's probably also a Goetheschule, but this was a smaller city, so there probably was no international kindergarten. And it was so nice. Yeah, I remember my first memories from there. I remember the kindergarten, the sports they made, capoeira. I didn't do capoeira. I practiced ballet. Ballet, it's the same in English, I think, yeah. Dance, it's like dancing. It's like a women thing, and we were the only boys there, and it was so nice having all the women around it. Yeah. I talked Portuguese perfectly, but afterwards I forgot, because I was too young to remember, but I remember Spanish, of course, and that's why I like to talk Spanish. But I didn't like it so much the last days when I made these other recordings. I felt like, yeah, it was Spanish, talking Spanish, talk about love is a little it's always this macho stereotype. It's always turning into really sketchy, I don't know how to say, kitschig, romantic, let's say that, overly, excessively romantic. And yeah, that's the feeling maybe sometimes you get, but I think maybe even English or German is better to describe adequately those romantic feelings, and Spanish is good for other things. But never mind, today I talk English because I talk to you, dear listeners, whoever you might be. I want to explain myself to the world. Yeah, that's the world language, of course. So this Brazilian sun just formed me, just gave me all its energy in my very early youth, and just made me so creative. Maybe I took something from that in me, but later my character changed in Germany. I blame the weather, of course, that I just grew into a boy that was very shy and didn't like to talk so much to his schoolmates, so I didn't make a lot of friends after a certain age, about 10, neither in Germany nor in Argentina. But never mind, I think back then I viewed it as a huge problem, because also my parents were concerned, of course. Yeah, always concerned parents for me. But no, I'm fine. And today also, although I smoke weed and they're concerned again, but I'm saying no. Whatever. So these days just formed my soul back then in Brazil, and this comes to the surface now again that I make all these podcasts, and never mind in English, in German, Spanish, it comes to the superficie, to the becomes clear. It's clear now. And yeah, I want to say now I feel in a decisive moment at my biography because of this podcasting addiction. It's really an addiction también, also that I just like to grab the mic and just record another Tischlein Deck Dich, which is really what I do. I don't do so many private recordings. It's really mostly Tischlein, and in the last 2 weeks it did a little more because I don't know why. I was sick, I was bored, and yeah, that's what I thought. I'm just in this moment where I become clear, where I become conscious about my real potential of creativeness. It's just so high. I made more than 100 episodes already, and I'm writing all these texts and like to write novels. Just didn't have the discipline until now. But never mind, it's not so bad. At least I try. I'm really in a productive, high productive phase, and so sad that I didn't try that earlier. From that time on in Argentina, where I also was a writer, I wrote privately sometimes obscure stuff that is interesting, but maybe to nobody other than me. But yeah, still, I like to read it sometimes. Of course, it's also painful to read things of the past, but I would just blame myself that I didn't go forward with this afterwards. When we returned to Germany, I studied here physics, but then I just thought it was too difficult for me, physics, and I studied computer science, and now I'm working as a programmer. Now, yeah, should have studied something like literature. But, of course, in this world, nobody's secure. Everybody's anxious. It's this horrendous fear of the future, what's going to be. Yeah, maybe we're going to be wiped out by the nukes soon enough, but even if not, that's just the economical situation for the younger generations. Equally on both continents, Europe and America, but there's no solution really within this framework. I'm just expressing that that's really it's a good thing to have to feel that fear and to think I must study computer science. It's a good thing we all get that sick, we all get that verzweifelt, desperate. Desesperado. We get desperate about our lives, about the future, about our biography, and that's good. That maybe can bring the revolutionary spirit into the individuals. We're very far from that today. Painfully, sadly, regrettably. But I'm just constructing my next joint, and that's none of your business, dear listeners. Just let me work here and just let me express that we're talking about history here. I laid before you all my biography, not because I liked to make these kind of psychological explorations and stuff, a striptease of the soul, like we, as we say here in Germany, Seelen striptease. No, but it's kind of related to history, don't you think? To the history, post-war, and to all of that. I mean, some countries like Argentina just didn't have a spot in this new world order after 45. Yeah, there was a new world order. It's very strange to hear now, Janet, that you're so fearful of a new world order. You're such reactionary. You don't want a revolution. A new world order would be something good. Of course, we, the revolutionaries, would have to define it, and not the mighty, the ones who are today powerful. We have to grab the power, but then impose a new world order. And of course, that sounds not so acceptable if you live in the United States or in Japan, and if you belong to an upper middle class, and all of the inhabitants of those lands belong to those upper middle class, like in Germany too, I gotta say, because they're so outset, they're just ausgesetzt, they're just told so by the mainstream media, and the major media is owned by the capitalist bourgeois class, beherrscht there. There's a Herrschen. This is a simple word. I really gotta notice. I gotta improve my English, my Spanish, all of it. My German, first place. I don't have to smoke so much. Shouldn't smoke so much, I gotta say. But never mind. Nobody's perfect. And there we come into the field of the Gewissensbisse, of the regrets of the soul, and the soul, the dark spots there. And that's for me also smoking. That's my Laster, my Vicio, my... Yeah, it's a vicious thing. Vicious, I don't know what's the substantive in English for this. Vicious, it's not a good thing to do if you're a good moral person, religious or moral in some other sense. Let's look this up. Vice, okay. Vice. Untugend, Unatmung. Lorry. No, lorry is the LKW, Laster ist también. Doesn't matter. Vice. So we all have our vices, and maybe that's because we just reproduce the big vices that history produced in this past century. Think about that, people. I just rolled up this joint for a minute. Yeah. If you smoke so much, you can't speak right, or at least they say it affects the speaking part of your brain, but I don't know. Curry, if you can scientifically support this remark. I don't know. It's just... So, now we're finished. Let's say, history is history. We gotta still tell ourselves a story. And the story I tell is that the Russian Revolution was not as bad, after all. Neither was the Holodomor, the killing of the Ukrainian peasants in 29. Neither was the Great Terror in Moscow. Those were also sad occurrences. And many people died tragically, and but it was within this framework of the right plan and the good political direction that the Bolshevik Party had embarked upon, and they did good things like beating Hitler, the main thing, and just they made this incredible progress from a really backward country, peasant country, and they developed. Then came Nazism, they had to fight this war, and that was just one war too much. They never really recovered from that, and that's why things went bad after the Stalin era. But I'm a Stalinist. Stalin did maybe not everything right, but most things right, and I'm just a communist, and should be clear for communists that they also have to make historical, educate themselves historically, and should think about what is their posture towards Stalin, because Yeah. Being consistent, in my view, means being a Stalinist. But okay, now, in Argentina, we don't have this kind of wealthy, prosperous new world order that was imposed, established in Germany, in Western Europe, and Japan. And yeah, they don't have it because they don't have a revolution, because they're also beherrscht. Ah, now I have to look this up. Beherrscht, dominate. They're commanded, yeah, they're commanded by their supervisors, their thinking supervisors. They say them what to think about revolutions and socialism. They say, tell them it's bad, socialism, of course. And therefore, there occurs no revolution in Argentina or Brazil, just the military dictatorship, also fascist dictatorship, although not as bad as Hitler, of course. But yeah, they killed 10,000, and all that was part also of a CIA coordinated network and a plan and supported by CIA. But okay, that's also part of this new world order. It's not all prosperous. These countries especially suffered economically from this fascist dictatorship, not only in human lives, but yeah. And then Argentina, even 20 years ago, suffered this yet another crisis after the fascism had ended, democracy returned, but still no communist revolution, and then this big financial crisis that they're stuck in now, already 20 years going, and yeah, it's like a kind of humiliation. It's a humiliating treaty, like the Versailles Treaty was a humiliation for Germany that provoked also the Second World War, and the same in Argentina today. Just they aren't as fascist as we are because, well, they're not as confident. They're just not as confident. I don't know. It's just a thinking. Of course, it would be nice to see a revolution, but not a fascist counter-revolution, as we should say, adequately. But the Argentinians, they don't get that. They're commanded there. So, yeah, what I gotta say is just everyone who thinks about Stalin as this kind of horrendous dictator is part of this commanded network, ideological network, is totally commanded by the bourgeoisie, by the capitalist, controlled, dominated, mastered. You're really slaves, as long as you think about history like this. Stalin and Hitler were two of a kind, right? And no, Stalin was the one who fought Hitler, unlike the Americans, at least in the beginning of the war. They didn't like to come over and open the second front, as Stalin asked them. And they just waited and lingered around for the Russians to die there by millions, and then when Germany was weak, they attacked. And of course, we also can be thankful for that. I thank you, Americans, and you also fought in Asia. But just, yeah, we can say it was a clever plan from the United States to say, let's bleed them out. The Germans and the Russians will slaughter each other, and well, Germany being short on fuel and being a too small country against three other major powers like Russia, United States, and United Kingdom, well, they lose eventually, and then we'll take over and go in there. And so the Western Allies just invaded Normandy in 1944, where it was clear that Germany was going to lose either way. Okay, but the real problematic, the real unmoralistic part comes after 45, or in 45, at the Potsdam Conference, when Churchill and Truman sided against Stalin, and yeah, they conceived all this plan the Cold War to go into this aggressive, really aggressive confrontation against Soviets and all communist regimes, start this Korea War that has repercussions still today. And yeah, that's all part of this fascist ideology that the United States just took over from Germany, and they saw the Nazis were very clever to dominate, invade other countries like that. They just thought, okay, we gotta keep the Germans down, we gotta give them economical development, aids, gotta pamper them, because if not, then the next Hitler might threaten our superb power. We just gotta be there with Germany as a minor ally, as a vassal. And so is their plan, and that's very clever, just not so moral and not so good for most of humankind and most of the people of Earth that are just being shattered, being thrown back into the mud and the dirt of their countries, where they don't have this industrialized environment, heavy industry. The workforce is educated and schools are good, language. They don't have this, and they can't develop into that direction under capitalist order. It's just a big slavery, and these people are enslaved by us. And so I just want to express that. And although the slavery is not as direct as in earlier ages, it's not as causally direct that the slave owner come brings his slaves from Africa there and then docks on the coast of the United States and gets paid for that. But either way, we're all enslaved in a way. Also the Americans, the proletariat, the working force is enslaved. Also, no agenda. You speakers of no agenda, hosts of no agenda, always claim to be not so rich. I don't have a lot of money. Okay, so you're also part of this working class, and that's good. You could also be a revolutionary, just not with your with a historical thinking analysis and the whole mindset that you have today, the mindset that you have to build up, that you have to educate yourself, is that you soothe the revolution. You just are anxious about the big rising, and yeah, you say maybe it could change some things. Maybe my money, well, the little money that I have, little savings, could maybe be part of new negotiations. Soothe is not the right word. You just desire. You crave. Yeah. You crave for that, and okay, so I've expressed all this. You say, yeah, I don't mind my savings and all that, although it's normal, it's logical in the capitalist framework. I don't blame you today if you invest in stocks and do whatever you want with your savings, but you should have this mindset and say, okay, what would I do if the revolutionary moment comes? Would I join the movement? Would I go to the streets, show my body, show I'm there, and I support this rising that hopefully doesn't turn into a fascist counter-revolution? We have to educate the working force and say the communist ideology is still the right one today, and if we don't educate ourselves in Marx's terms, in Marx's texts and other important Marxists like Lenin and Stalin, then we will be thrown back, it will end up in a mess. The revolution will not be successful. So much I can say for today. And I feel just that I'm a Nazi, I'm German Nazi. It's our identity, and it's not my conviction, but for historical reasons, it's our identity today. It's what our wealth is grounded upon. And that's just me, that's just my people, me and my people. And yeah, it's kind of released me too, because I always thought about characteristic shortcomings in my person. And now, today, I just realized it's not me, it's my whole people. We all have this shortcoming, and it's really embarrassing, it's really astonishing. It's shameful. Opprobrious. So people, I must say I'm pretty worked out. I'm pretty tired now. I was just working earlier for Porsche. Well, of course we all only a contractor of Porsche. I'm really at the lowest level of the working force of the proletariat. But never mind, people. I don't feel so well with all that I've said, but I wanted to say all that and just give you a crash course in history. And just want to say that you Americans, you're also at the top of the world, you're kind of in a similar position. And let's take aside our differences in history. We, the Germans, once were the strongest people and did invade others. Then you became the strongest people on earth and stayed quite a while up until today. But never mind, it's both kind of regimes are brutal and they're inhumane. But what I just gotta say is these people in other countries, in underdeveloped countries like Cuba and Northern Korea, or Korea back then in the 50s, like Argentina and Brazil and Namibia, all these people look at us, the whites, as kind of gods. It's kind of like back then in the South America when the Spanish colonialists came and were seen as gods because they were white, and the indigenous just thought, yeah, they must be some divine being. And the same is in fact the matter of fact, or the fact of the matter today, in my view. And they see us, when I arrive in Argentina, and my roommates, although they belong also to a very rich class, because it's a private school, of course, in Argentina this is, it's all different, of course, separated in private and public school, and yeah, but still they just look at us Germans and say, wow, such a well-functioning, coordinated, powerful, wealthy country. And wouldn't it be nice to just live there? Well, of course, the weather, but why just aren't we Argentinians like them? It must be something in their DNA. It must be something that the Germans just have, and they're superior to us. And yeah, the same, of course, for you Americans, maybe, but that's maybe different, because yeah, South America is a little resentful for all these hostile politics against it in the last decades. But towards Europe and Germany, South Americans do have a quite different outlook, and they look at us like the shining stars that still are there guiding humanity as moral, whatever. And maybe that's changing now with the Ukraine war, hopefully so, but it's a long way to go, I think. It doesn't really matter what my people here in Germany thinks, you know, what I think about them, and I think that it doesn't... there's no point in discussing. We're just lost here. It's a lost country, lost territory, lost continent. There's nothing else to say. It's just a matter of time, in my opinion, that also I for myself should take this decision for my biography to emigrate. But whatever the case, today, still not that bad. Still wealthy, of course. So, but that might change. I don't know. It's not about the wealth, it's about the whatever. Doesn't even matter. You hear that I'm tired, that I just don't wanna, can't talk anymore, and it's shameful. Yeah, that's really a shameful fact also. And just I think I've expressed myself to length and to every depth, and we'll go into also this erotic depth in other episodes, but today really not. I'm just not that guy today, and I'm just German, just saying, yeah, that's me. I mean, it's maybe my novel that I described earlier. You have to be really blunt, you have to really dig into that dirt, the dirt of Hitler, the Hitler time, as I highlighted last time in Vienna with Freud, and see Hitler as also just one fucked up individual, just one expression of the whole fucked up humanity, and just this humanity that deserves compassion. And therefore I speak to you, no gender also, although I just firmly reject all your ideology and thinking of the world. Although I, of course, appreciated your podcast for a long time, just now I don't have time to listen so much. I have to speak up myself in my podcast. So thanks and goodbye.